Welcome to installment 294 of Sefer HaMitzvot from the Rambam. Today's portion contains one commandment, positive commandment number 242, regarding the financial responsibility of a person who is an unpaid watchman for an object, a shemer chinum. This fourth category concludes our laws of the different types of watchmen. As we've mentioned in some of the previous shiurim, there are four different categories of people who are watching or utilizing objects belonging to another person. There is a sheyel, someone who borrows an object, and he is the person with the greatest financial responsibility. This is because, as a borrower, he is getting all the benefit from the transfer of this object. He's not paying any money, and he gets use of the object. On the other extreme is an unpaid watchman, a shemer chinum, and he is not today's mitzvah. This is a person who has been asked to watch a certain object, and he does not take any money for it, and he is not allowed to utilize the object. This person is getting no benefit whatsoever, is merely doing a favor for the owner of the object. Therefore, he has a very slight financial responsibility. The intermediate category, where sometimes he is responsible and sometimes not, is the case of a person who is getting paid as a watchman, a shemer sacher, or a person who has rented the object, which in either of these cases, both parties are getting benefit and both share the responsibility. The commandment derives from the book of Exodus, chapter 22, verse 6, which states, Ki'itin ish el reyehu, when one person gives another, kesef o kelim lishmer, money or objects in order to watch. And being that the person is not getting paid, the Torah continues, v'gunav mi beis ha'ish, even if it's stolen, if the thief is found, the thief must pay double. But the shemer himself, the watchman, does not have to pay anything at all. Rather, he takes an oath in Beis Din, in the Jewish court, that he was not negligent in guarding the object, and that he did not unlawfully utilize the object for his own purposes, and then he is exempt from any form of payment. This is if the object was stolen. And even more so, if it was a case of Einus Gadol, an accident which was really beyond his control, such as the animal dying or the animal being taken captive by armed robbers, in any of these cases it was completely beyond his control, and he certainly is exempt from payment. The only time he is required to pay is when he was grossly negligent in care of this pikadin, of the object entrusted to him for safekeeping. The law is that the watchman is required to provide security for this object, a normal act of prevention to keep the object from being harmed. As the Rambam in his legal code gives examples, if we have a pile of straw, one is not required to put it in a bank vault. It would be enough to keep it in one's courtyard. However, should it be money, depending on the amount of thieves present in the area, one might be required to actually bury it in the ground to ensure that the thieves do not get hold of it. And as the Rambam quotes, once it happened that a person was entrusted with money to guard, and he buried it, he hid it in the walls of his house. He had walls made out of kanim, out of reeds, out of sticks, and he buried it in the middle of his wall, which is certainly a place where the thieves would not think to look. However, as it happens, the thieves broke through the wall, and they found the money, and they stole it. The question was, did this person have responsibility since he was negligent and improperly provided for safekeeping of the money, or was he exempt since he had given a normal amount of guarding and therefore was beyond his control that it was stolen? The Rambam ruled that he was responsible. Why should he be responsible if he guarded it and by putting it in the middle of a wall, which is a place people would not normally think to steal? Why should he be responsible? He took good care of it, and this should be a case of theft, which the Chumash says he is exempt from. And the Rambam answers that although he guarded it well from theft, he did not guard it well from fire. That a person should be aware that a wood house could easily catch on fire. Therefore, that is not a proper place to hide the money. And even though it did not catch on fire, it was stolen. And theft was something which would not normally be expected. Nevertheless, his degree of guarding was insufficient since he placed it in a place which was a fire hazard. And therefore, he bore a financial responsibility. Let's say one has been entrusted with a Torah scroll to keep. The law is that one is required to occasionally go through and roll the entire Torah scroll from end to end. That if air does not enter the scroll, it will become ruined. It will rot away quickly. The law is that unless you're rolling it, you're not allowed to read it. Because your reading it might wear out the scroll quickly. However, even when one is allowed to read, it is only something which he has studied well. Because something which has not been studied well, the person will take a long time to read, and therefore will cause undue wear on the Torah scroll. However, we see in the Shulchan Aruch an interesting law, that this applies only to the case of the written Torah, and particularly the Chumash. But in the days when the Talmud was also written on such scrolls, the law is that even if you have learned it, and you know it well, you're still not allowed to look in. And the reason is because when it comes to Talmudic reasoning, the more you have learned, the less you understand. The more you have learned and the more you understand it, the deeper you will have to go in to answer all of the additional questions you have. And in particular, to determine exactly what is the legal conclusion, it takes a great deal of effort and a great deal of study. Therefore, the law is, when it comes to a Talmudic section, one is not allowed to delve into it even for a minute, and even if one knows it very well, and in fact, in particular, if one knows it very well, it is forbidden. The details of this law are discussed in the 9th chapter of Baba Kama, the 3rd chapter of Baba Metzia, and the 8th chapter of Shavuos. It is pointed out in Sforim that sometimes Hashem himself is called a Shemer, a guard. As we say in our prayers, Shemer Yisrael, the guardian of the Jewish people. However, whether Hashem gets paid, so to speak, depends on the way we act. Sometimes Hashem could even be considered a shayel, a borrower. Why? Because just as in the case of a borrower, the person who borrows is getting all of the benefits, so to speak, so too when the Jewish people are doing a tremendous amount of mitzvahs, then Hashem is like a borrower. He is getting exactly what he wants and is getting all the benefit. Sometimes Hashem comes out being like a paid watchman, that although he is guarding us, nevertheless, he also gets paid. He pays us by guarding us, and we pay him by doing at least some mitzvahs. However, at some time, sometimes the Jewish people are very lax, God forbidden, performance of mitzvahs. And at that time, Hashem takes on the status of a shemir chinam, an unpaid watchman. Although he watches over the Jewish people, nevertheless, he does not get his pay, so to speak. He does not get back the investment which he puts into us by giving us our holy neshama, our holy soul, the godly soul. He does not get back the investment which he put into things. Since we don't do mitzvahs, he gets nothing back. He is an unpaid watchman, so to speak. And nevertheless, even though Hashem might sometimes be treated as an unpaid watchman, nevertheless, he still watches over the Jewish people and still takes care of us. As the Talmud says, Bein kach u'bein kach banayhem. Hashem says that regardless of their actions, the Jewish people are still my children. And as explained and illuminated in Chassidic philosophy, this comes to indicate the deep love that Hashem has for the Jewish people. It is not like the love of one person for another, which is based on some understanding or some feeling of attraction for one another. Rather, the love of Hashem for the Jewish people is like the love of a father to a son, an intrinsic love, an absolute love, which is independent of any other factors. And just as even though a child might sin against the father, and disobey the orders of the father, this does not change the fatherly love which the father has for the child. So too, Hashem's love for the Jewish people is absolute and cannot be changed. And regardless of our behavior, Hashem remains strong and firm in his love to us. And all the more so when Hashem is not only Hashem Erchinim, when we are actually doing commandments, and we are showing him that we do deserve his love, above the essential love that it exists for the Jewish people, even when we behave poorly, so much more so the love is revealed when we behave properly. And as the Zohar compares the Jewish people to a bride, and Hashem himself to the groom, and says that in the time of the exile, that the Jewish people are like a bride roaming around in the middle of a smelly place where people are preparing tanning skins, which is a very smelly place. And the Jewish people are like a bride wandering around in such a place. And nevertheless, Hashem, for his intense love for his kala, for his bride, the Jewish people, he goes down into the tannery and pulls the Jewish people out of this smelly place, out of the wretched golas, and brings us to the land of Israel with the coming of Mashiach, b'mehera v'yameinu. Thank you for tuning in to the daily portion of Sefer HaMitzvahs. For more information or to dedicate a shir, contact Sichas in English at area code 718-778-5436. Please join us again tomorrow.